Blog Talk Radio.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
No, I said I was going to be on last week. I was on vacation, so I decided to give you all a break. So, I figured, we'll see what happens. NASCAR was off past weekend. NHRA and ARCA were in action, so I figured I'd bring it up to this week. You know, NASCAR is going to be off again. Being they're broadcasting on NBC, which is hosting the Wokio Olympics, which nobody seems to be watching, so I'm not watching it. I don't know about y'all. SRX is in action. I got to tie into that a little better so we have something else to talk about. They didn't race this past weekend either, but they raced before, and apparently things got a little crazy out there. Haley Deegan was running. Her and Paul Tracy, yes, former IndyCar driver Paul Tracy, who's now in that series. Actually put into the wall, whether he came down on her. She's saying she held her line. I saw a video she posted up. So, yeah, basically, she's, she don't take no crap from anybody. So we'll see. Hopefully here she'll be the one woman who gets a good career and can do something beyond what the women in NASCAR have been able to do. I mean, NHRA does have women who have won championships and multiple championships. So NASCAR has yet to break that glass ceiling yet. The women who have gotten to the cup level have not gone to where they've even won, maybe a couple finish in the top tens. The only woman that has done anything, even as far as winning a pole or finishing in the top 10, and it wasn't very often, was Danica. Everybody thought she had the drive, the equipment. It's another thing. I mean, driving for Tony Stewart shows that the equipment was good enough, because Tony's won a championship with his team. Kevin Harvick has won, so we'll just have to wait for the next round. I mean, we have Natalie Decker and Haley. Which one of those two will be the one? Both are not in the Cup Series yet, but they're fighting their way, so we'll just have to see how that goes. So, we'll see what it is. Anyway, let's see what had an action. Some big news that we've come across was that Brad Keselowski, who has long since come up with Roger Penske, originally drove for, believe it or not, Dale Jr. in the Xfinity series. So made some news this week, so here's a little bit of the press conference they had last Tuesday. Of course, it would have been after this show anyway, but let's see what they had to say. Apparently, they made an offer Brad couldn't refuse. His contract this year was up with Penske, so Brad is a Sprint or NASCAR Cup Series champion. They don't have a major sponsor name anymore. So he's going to be bringing that with a shot at another one going over to Roush. Of course, most of the engines that Fords use are Roush Yates. Penske's running Ford, so Roush is running Ford, so it really wouldn't be much of a learning curve, so let's hear what the top brass have to say. Here's Jack Roush, Steve Newmark, Ed Boyce, and Brad.
Hello.
All right. We'll get started here. In case you don't know me, my name is Kevin Woods with Roush Fenway Racing. First of all, we're very excited about the news that we have today. But in some ways, it's equally exciting to see many of you together here in this room in person. It's been a long time since we've been able to do that and have that. And it's wonderful to see you all, and hopefully we'll get to visit with everybody. Also want to thank all the people listening. This is streaming live on NASCAR.com and on SiriusXM, NASCAR Radio as well. So what I'm going to do is introduce our guests here on the stage, and then I'm going to turn it over to Steve for the news. So starting with Steve, we have the president of Roush Fenway Racing, Mr. Steve Newmark. From Fenway Sports Group, the Executive Vice President, Corporate Strategy and General Counsel, Mr. Ed Weiss. A man that needs no introduction, we have NASCAR Hall of Fame right here in the Hall of Fame, team owner Jack Roush. And then we are very pleased to be joined today by NASCAR champion driver Brad Keselowski. Steve?
Thank you, Kevin. Before I kick it off, I want to take a moment to express our gratitude to the NASCAR media and all the industry participants that joined us here. I know a lot of you guys were up in New Hampshire this past weekend, and probably more importantly, we're leading into one of the very rare and few off weekends that we have during the season, and it means a lot that you guys showed up to join us for this. And then, of course, want to thank Winston and the whole Hall of Fame staff. There's just not a better setting for us to do something of this magnitude. So what we're here to do, and I'm extremely thrilled to announce, or maybe based on the rampant speculation, it's more appropriate to say that I'm thrilled to confirm that Roush Fenway Racing and Brad Keselowski will be starting a partnership in 2022. And this is an unbelievably unique arrangement for us, and it's something that in our mind kind of solidifies and fortifies our future and guarantees that we're going to be at the top and trying to excel for decades to come. And so the transaction essentially has kind of three pieces. That's why we kind of say it's a little bit different than the normal arrangement that we've entered into in the past. And the first is that Brad will be behind the wheel of the number six car starting in 2022 and will pilot that vehicle for years to come. He will also be purchasing a minority ownership stake in the company. So along with Roush Industries and Jack and the Fenway Group, that triumvirate will lead us from a strategic perspective for years to come. And then very importantly, Brad will also be assuming a leadership mantle at our organization. Even while he's driving, he will be on the competition committee. And then once his driving career runs its course, whenever that may be and whenever he decides that that's the time, he will shift over into an even greater role leading our competition side. And so, you know, from our perspective, this is the next step in the evolution of our team. And we're extremely confident that this is going to facilitate and allow us to excel for years to come. Before I pass it back to Kevin, I really do want to express to Brad and Paige and the girls how excited the Roush Fenway family is to be bringing the whole Keselowski group into our team. And we're really excited to have an anchor for our organization for decades to come.
All right, what we'll do here is we'll hear from everyone up here, and then we will take questions from the media. We'll do our best to accommodate. As Steve said, we are very thankful that everyone joined us here today. We'll do everything we can to accommodate each of your needs. But your general questions, if we can get that taken care of here in a minute, and then what we need after that, we'll break out and figure out what we need to do. But first of all, Steve, can you just talk about how this came together with Brad?
Sure. So this is, as you can probably appreciate, was not a short kind of reactive process. This has been something that has been kind of brewing and coming together over months. And in fact, it really stemmed from the fact that Brad and I, over the years in the garage, and over those years, we've regularly gotten together a couple times a year just to talk about the state of the sport, talk about the direction, whether that's the charter system, stage racing, and particularly in my prior role with the Team Owner Council, I relied quite a bit on Brad for input from the driver's side. And I think, as many of you know, Brad is one of the more kind of cerebral, thoughtful drivers in the garage, and I really valued his opinion. And so it was sometime in the fall we were having one of those conversations, and Brad asked what the Roush Fenway ownership group thought about the next-gen transition. So there was a lot of focus on where we were headed with next-gen. And I was able to tell him unequivocally that from the Fenway and the Roush perspective, we think next-gen is a pivot point for the sport and is one that our owners are committed to investing and continuing to build upon. And I think more importantly, stepping back, we talked about how our ownership group really believes that NASCAR is going in the right direction and really bullish on the future. And a lot of that stems from the leadership provided by Jim France, Steve Phelps, and Steve O'Donnell, and a lot of the initiatives around next gen, scheduling, social initiatives, esports. And so we talked a lot about the future and why we were coming up with 5 and 10 year plans. But we actually also explained that there was kind of a hole in our strategy going forward, and that one of the things that we were looking for at Roush Fenway is a more solid succession plan. As Jack has told me from day one, it's his goal that this company exists long beyond when he's working 24 hours a day to make the cars go faster. And so I said that's what our primary focus was. At the same time, Brad explained kind of where he was from a career position and started to describe that, he loved driving, and that's obviously his primary goal is to win championships now. But importantly, he was looking at what was beyond that. And he had always aspired to be a leader and make sure that he stayed in the sport, and he agreed with the narrative about where the sport was going. And so that really started a series of dialogues about, a potential partnership. And it wasn't something that we just jumped into. There was actually no ownership even discussed in the first several meetings. And over the next few months, I socialized it with our board. And I think what was really important to our board was it's obviously a win if you can get a Hall of Fame driver to get behind the wheel of one of your cars. That's always going to make your organization better. But from our perspective, what was more important was the leadership skills that Brad brings. And if you look at his history and his career, you know, he was essentially discovered by Dale Jr., started at Junior Motorsports, and at the time, they hadn't won on the racetrack, and Dale and Brad, and I'm sure many others, worked together to help elevate that organization, which is now one of the premier Xfinity teams in there. The same thing with Penske Racing. Obviously, Brad joined Roger and Walt, Tim and Bud, and one of the premier motorsports organizations globally, and he helped to elevate along with those, with that team, to championships, wins, and we've all seen the success that they've had. And I think that was what was so appealing to our organization, was that Brad could bring that type of leadership and vision and would work with Jack going forward to make sure that we stayed at the top of our game.
I guess on that note, we'll take it over to you, Brad. Can you talk about why this made so much sense for you to do this and really how excited you are to get moving on this next chapter?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Kevin, and great comments, Steve. I'd like to start by saying thanks to the fans that are in attendance here today. I had no idea there was going to be so many of you, and it's I'm really thrilled to see that. Now, there's a lot of people wearing two shirts and two hats that will eventually get you converted over to number six. That'll be a little bit of a change, but we're glad to have you, and appreciate you joining this ride with me. I'd echo Steve's sentiments with respect to the media. Thank you for your time here today. I understand a lot of people are enjoying these, at least in the NASCAR media, a few weeks that we have off, and maybe cut short some vacation schedules and so forth, but thank you for making that time and the commitment. So I really appreciate that. Thank you to Mr. Jack for this opportunity. You know, the confidence that you've shown to allow me to have this is really remarkable, and I appreciate it very much. Along with Mr. John Henry and to you, Mr. Ed Weiss, and the whole Fenway team as well. The support and embrace that you guys have shown is a big part of the reason why this became a reality. And then I would be remiss to not recognize Team Penske, everything they've done for me and my career. I'm still competing with them, of course, through the 2021 season with the goal of winning a championship. I want to leave Team Penske with a championship to come here to this new opportunity. And so full commitment to finishing the year out as strong as possible. I think hopefully you saw that this week at the racetrack in New Hampshire. We're still competing hard for wins and doing everything we can. And it's been a heck of a journey with Roger Penske and so forth and the whole team. And I'm really proud of it. You know, I'd be remiss to say I'm not a little bit sad to leave some great people and some great friendships, but I'm more so excited, of course, with this opportunity in front of me. It's an incredible opportunity, and, you know, I think digging deeper into that, you know, there's probably a lot of people wondering what I saw here that made it great, as you were asking, Kevin, and really Steve talked a little bit about it, but there was four key components to me. The ability to have a long-term driving contract was something I valued. I want to stay at one place and be there for a long time, and hopefully for the rest of my career. I know that's the intent and goal. And that position was of course, offered to me, as Steve articulated. The second position, which was really important to me, was to be in a leadership role, which, to maybe explain that, we're forming a competition committee that I'm proud to be a part of leading. So that will come together and I think allow me the freedom to express myself creatively and to lead the company and team to be the best it can be. That was really critical to me, to be able to have more control over my overall destiny with respect to matters competition related. The third thing was, of course, the ownership position. That's quite a unique opportunity that really excites me. Ownership is something I've always, I think, articulated to the fans and media. It was important to me long term. It represents growth for me personally and professionally, which is very important, and creates a deeper tie-in to really the fourth point, which is to have a role in this sport when I'm done driving. You know, I'm standing here in the NASCAR Hall of Fame, and there's no irony lost on me that, you know, a lot of the names that you see in here are still involved in the sport in some way, shape, or form past their driving career. But a lot are not. I cannot see a day where I'm done driving and I don't want to be a part of this sport. And this opportunity allows me just that, the ability to have a role in the sport past my driving career. So I think those four things were really critical to me There were a lot of opportunities that were thrown at me, whether it be by Team Penske or other teams, but not one of them held a candle to this one. So I'm really excited about it. It was nothing short of a no-brainer for me to take this opportunity. And I know I have a lot of work in front of me. It's going to be tough. You know, this team has won a lot of races, championships, and we have room to grow and to get better. No doubt, I'm committed to doing just that and recognize the challenge that's ahead. So that challenge, I know it's going to be tough, but there's some things that give me confidence. I think first off, you look at one of the models for me to take on this opportunity was Tony Stewart and what he did with Stewart Haas Racing. You know, I think it was probably in a similar position when he joined. In fact, I was looking through the stats on it. He had the same amount of wins and was the same age when he moved over to Gene Haas's team. That was probably more by coincidence than choice. But clearly that shows that you can be successful with this type of arrangement. There's certainly quite a precedent there. Beyond that, of course, the next gen coming into the sport should be a significant reset for the technology, a significant reset for the way the processes flow, and some of those things that we would need to overcome. So I think kind of taking that down the course of NASCAR leadership and some of the things they have going on, a lot of confidence in where the sport's heading. I think we're on a big upswing, and I kind of feel like I'm buying into a stock as it's about to go up with looking at the landscape. I would add to it two more things that really add to our confidence that we can be successful. The front office here at Roush Fenway is exceptional. I was blown away by some of the things I saw, whether it be the relationship with the Fenway Group, with Fenway Sports Management, and their ability to really land blue chip sponsorships, and not just land them, but service them at a very high level, and be the kind of partner that represents them in such a form that they literally win awards and are, you know, recognized for it. So that is a key component to the success of the company. Everybody knows if you want to go fast, you got to spend money, and you got to have money to do it with, which means having great sponsors and partners that will help us invest in the team to do the things that are required to be successful. So that was pretty exciting to me. And then, you know, probably the last point is, you know, I feel like I've lived a lot of this experience before, as Steve iterated with the experience that I had at Junior Motorsports coming there and being a part of seeing it become successful and the founding of my truck team in 2010 and watching it grow into a company that could consistently win races and even more so grow people. Starting next year, we'll have 5 full-time drivers in the Cup Series that came through that program, and probably dozens more permeate through the garage in different roles. That was such an exciting thing to be a part of, and gives me confidence that we can do the same, and hopefully we'll retain them at the Cup level. But I'm really thrilled about that and the success we had with growing people. And then the last component, of course, is my time at Team Penske. I'm so proud to have been a part of that and to learn so many different lessons along the path. You know, I'm really proud of the fact that when I came to Team Penske, the car I got in was in similar position and points and standings to the one I'm going to get in next year. And in 2.5 years' time, we were able to win a championship. I carry those same expectations forward, and the expectations are very high. So I really think, all these things considered, I feel like we can be the best NASCAR team. And I'm coming here with an expectation no less than that and ready to move forward to be a part of achieving that goal. And it starts right here. Today's the official announcement of that journey. Thanks for being a part of it, and I can't wait to get started.
Jack, let's move to you talking about this journey. Can you talk about this partnership, what it means to your legacy, and what made Brad the right person?
For 10 years, I'd watched Brad as he came into the sport. And he had to struggle and fight prejudice sometimes. He came from an outside region of the southeast where NASCAR is born and operates most traditionally. But he fought his way in, and he earned the space to compete. He figured out what he needed to do to be a factor, and he competed for winning races successfully. And he competed to win his championship, and he's one of the top drivers in the sport. He's an inspiration to me for what he's done with his truck team. To put it in perspective, you know, we had our greatest success when we had five teams, and the bigger challenge would have been to have one team and realize the improvement you needed to have in the parts and what the strategies need to be in order to keep the thing moving forward. But anyway, he was successful with his truck team, which was very impressive to me. He was competitive as a driver, going to the highest levels of the sport. And he, in the meantime, initiated and started an aerospace manufacturing service company that has got a great future. And so he's ready for his next challenge, which is participate in the ownership of a team. I welcome him as a partner and look forward to what we can do together. I've been asked to say that I'm passing my baton to him, which I am, but I still have one hand on the thing, so I'm not going to give up completely for a while. There's no retirement plans for me in my immediate future. I intend to keep going to the racetracks the way I have and to be as much of a nuisance and a distraction as I've been to my drivers and my crew chiefs in the past. But over a period of time, Brad will earn his independence. And he will gain a significant position of ownership in the team. One of the things that's been a challenge for me is to answer the questions I've gotten over a period of time. When are you going to retire and what's your ascension plan? Well, Brad Keselowski and the next gen car and the things that we can do together in the near term and the future that we see long term is my retirement plan, and I just hope I can take lots of green flags and lots of checkered flags before we get there.
Ed, can you talk about how excited the folks at Fenway are about Brad becoming a big part of the team?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing that I would say is the partnership that the Fenway Group has with Jack, with Evan Lyle, and with Roush Industries has never been stronger. It's a very rare that a 50-50 partnership can be in sports enduring and smooth, but this has been a very long and enduring and smooth relationship from the beginning. So I want to thank you, Jack, for that. I can't think of an issue where we've looked at it in different ways, and I really look like the selection and addition of Brad to this partnership is very much in the spirit of a smooth and enduring tradition. We at our other teams want to compete to win championships every year. That is our core DNA. We're very excited about the trajectory of this sport, but you have to be successful on the track. And I think this move is entirely motivated to getting us back to what the legacy, what Jack's legacy is of Roush Fenway, being in the hunt for a championship every year. So we're just thrilled to be part of it, that Brad joined the enterprise.
All right, what we're going to do now, Wendy has the mic, so we'll open it up for questions. We'll go first to Claire B. there, then we'll go to Jordan.
Claire B. Lang, SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. You tweeted a few days ago a song by U2, With or Without You, and then you tweeted, if your dreams do not scare you, they are not big enough. Can you talk about that, Brad?
Well, this is a big challenge, but it's a big dream of mine to be an owner and a partner at the NASCAR level with, the right ownership group, and I think this is it. But, it's scary. I have a great team right now. I'm not going to say anything differently, and I've been very privileged to drive for Team Penske and to have the success we've had. It's tough to leave that, and I don't want to deny that in any shape or form. But this is a big dream of mine that was worth leaving it for. It's not an easy transition, because I know the work is going to be hard. And that is scary, right? It's scary to leave something where you know you can be successful, to go to a new opportunity, but I believe in this opportunity. But we have to go do the work. Nobody's going to give anything to us. We have to go work for it.
And Jack, right from the beginning, did you think that this was the right thing to do? Were you searching for other things? Did you need to do something at this stage? And when you came together with Brad, were you immediately like, yeah, this is right, we need this, or did it take convincing? And thank you.
Brad has distinguished himself by taking on more things than he needed to be successful as a driver and participate in NASCAR. His track team was a big challenge, but he wanted to do that apparently in order to get that get his legs under a team operation. And I can't say more about how impressed I am with his space age manufacturing aerospace components to take that on as a separate skill set and a totally different industry speaks volumes. So I look forward as Brad finishes his driving career, which hopefully will be not sooner than 5 years, and hopefully I'll stretch it like I did Mark Martin. I'll stretch it many more than that if I can. But, you know, for him to be willing to think about not how he's going to spend his money and enjoy his time off after he stops racing, driving, but to have him think about what he could do at participating in the next level in the management of a team. And to enjoy bringing along young people to realize their dreams, to start their careers, and have things develop so that they can have the security for their families and all. He's willing to be a participant and to make his mark in that as well. And so that those interests and those motivations fall in line with what I'd hoped for my drivers. And I think it marks a path for other drivers and other owners to think about their legacy plans as the years advance. You know, you can't do anything about the advancement of years. You just got to plan to make the most of them.
There you have the Ralph Spenway brass and new driver owner Brad Keselowski. Well, the big news there. I don't remember anybody actually on Team Ralph Spenway winning a NASCAR Cup. I know some have won prior to that. Wait. I take that back. We did have two. That's right, two. Matt Kenseth did it, and Kurt Busch did it in the last years of the Nextel Cup era before that went to Sprint. See, I didn't have to Google that. It just was buried in the back of my head, and finally popped out as I was pondering this, and whatever. Anyway, if you want to give me a call in, it's 646-649-1899, and be happy to take your call. All right, let's check out the NHRA out in Sonoma Raceway in Wine Country. Being that in ARCA was the only active racing that was on this weekend in the Top Fuel division. Came down to Leah Pruitt and Steve Torrance. Torrance, number two qualifier. And we had an area, two pieces of ladder where nobody filled, so instead of 16 in the Top Fuel division, there was only 14, so one unencumbered. Round one featuring number 12, Ron August, up against Brittany Force, number one qualifier. Brittany with a screaming 370 with a 3 at 330 miles an hour. With an 094 reaction, not really... .111 a reaction there. So Brittany had him by 0.02 on that, almost. And just blew him. I mean, it wasn't even close. 4229 tells me traction issues. Then she goes up in round two against Leah Pruitt, who was going to go on to the finals. Leah with an 069. Justin Haley is 083. And she beat him all the way around. Off the light, down the track, her 373, his 375. Almost 374 to 376. So we're looking at exactly 2 seconds, 2/10 of a second. No, 100. 2/100 of a second. Boy, my math is off today. Anyway, and up against Brittany Force. Leah was number 6 on the qualification. So then the battle of the ladies in round two was Leah versus Brittany. Leah, 0.101. Brittany, 0.082. Great reaction on 2/100 for better for Brittany, but had some traction issues. 4.35 for Brittany and Leah, 3.95. So Leah runs in the semis by herself with a 372, 092. And Steve Torrance, on the other hand, number two qualifier, it was 078 to Cameron Furries, 085, a 412 for Furry, 371 for Torrance. Then up against Doug Kalita in round two, 373 and 381 for Kalita. Then up against Antron Brown in the semis, 373, 381. Almost a full tenth there, even though Antron was a full hundredth better off the light. So that set it up for Leah and Steve. It was close, real close. 0.106 off the light, 0.115. That's almost 1/10 faster, almost. I mean, 1/100 faster. Actually, 0.09 quicker than Torrance, but it wasn't enough. Leah was 376 with an 8, and Torrance was 375 with a 7. She might have pulled it off with a hole shot, but it was that close. Torrance takes the Wally. Leah's the runner-up. Leah, low ET, 372. Where are they counting it from? Brittany was a 370 with a 1. Best reaction time, 046, Antron Brown. And Steve Torrance, top speed, 331. They gave that to Leah with a 372. And she did that in semis. Brittany Force in round one was a 370 with a 3. So I think I'd argue that one. But it really doesn't matter. You don't get anything for it except bragging rights. But that's neither here nor there. Let's go to the funny car division. Finals came down to Robert Height and Matt Hagen. Height round one up against Steve Densham. And then J.R. Todd in round two, Ronnie Capps in round three, and Hagen, number three qualifier, and up against Jeff Deal in round one, and Blake Alexander in round two, up against Alexis DeJoria in round three, And in the finale, Height with an 054 off the light. Hagen a bit quicker, 036. And when it came down to it, it was close because Height had a 397 with a 1. And Hagen had a 399 with a 1. So that's a full 2/100ths of a second. And that kind of helped Robert Height off the light by the almost 2/100ths of a second there. Pro stock. Came down to Aaron Stanfield and Dallas Glenn. Never heard of Glenn, but that don't mean anything. Stanfield was your number 5 qualifier. Took out Chris McGahey in round 1. Matt Hartford in round 2. Greg Anderson in the semis. Dallas Glenn up against Val Smellen in round 1. Kyle Koretsky in round 2. And Troy Coughlin in the semis. Stupid things. There we go. So off the light, Stanfield, 020. Dallas Glenn, 016. Where it counted the most, ET made up the difference for that 4/1000ths. This difference off the light. .655 for Stanfield and a .658 for Glenn. So that's a big difference there. 4/1000ths better isn't going to make up almost 3/100ths. So give it to Aaron Stanfield. Low ET, Erica Enders, 6.52. Best reaction time, 006. Erica Enders, top speed, Erica Enders. Erica, dear, what happened? Round 1, and everything was done in the first round. Troy Coughlin, her teammate, got her in round 2 and was able to advance to the semis. And where he got her was the hole shot. His 007 in round 2. She was an 044 in round 2. And because she had a 653 and he had a 655. So, yeah, there's some big difference there in the off the line. It's like, Erica, what happened? All right, did they run motorcycles? Sometime they do, sometime they don't. Karen Stouffer and Andrew Hines in the finals. There's a name I haven't seen in the finals in a while, if at all, that I've been covering the sport, is Karen Stouffer. She was the number 2 qualifier. Andrew Hines was the number 5 qualifier. Angie Smith was the number 1 qualifier. Ooh, it was ladies weekend. Two ladies qualifying 1 and 2. The only one who wasn't in the top 10 was Angel Sampe. She was 14th, and Gianna Salinas was 11th. So lots of ladies in the pro stock bike competition. And I think that's, what, 6 or 5? Smith, Stouffer, Sampe, and Salinas. 4, sorry. I said I can't count. So Andrew Hines, who hasn't been in a final in a while, qualified 5th, took on Ryan Oler in round 1. Again, defending champ Matt Smith in round 2. And up against Corey Reed in the semis. Stouffer, on the other hand, took on Scott Botorff in round one, Joey Gladstone in round two, Jerry Savoie in the semis. And she got off the line a whole hell of a lot quicker, let alone the ET, but 003 to 037, that's pretty much nails in the coffin there. So in round one against Andrew Hines, oh, this was a close one. Andrew Hines, 047 off the light. Stouffer, 044. 6.800 for Andrew Hines. Karen Stouffer, 6.798. 2/1000ths of a second faster on the ET. 3/1000ths of a second faster off the tree for 5/1000ths of a second difference. Man. So Hines with the runner-up, low ET at 675. Best reaction time, Karen Stouffer, 001. 001. Round one. And top speed, Matt Smith, 202.27 miles an hour. Let's check the standings. Steve Torrence, clinched countdown berth. He's got a 349-point lead over Antron Brown. Yeah, there's no way that's going to get made up. There's only six races in the countdown, and Brittany Force is third, Sean Langdon fourth. Billy Torrence, Leah Pruitt, fifth. There's a tight battle right there between fourth, fifth, and sixth. Billy Torrence, seventh. 448 for Torrence, 457 for Pruitt, and 460. And then it's like 100 points between Brittany and Sean Langdon. So it's not going to be a battle there. Mike Salinas in seventh. Doug Kalita, eighth. Justin Ashley, ninth. And on the bubble, Clay Milliken, but he's got a 39-point lead over Josh Hart. So that's at that point, it's usually pretty good there. Nobody clinched in funny cars. Everything is fairly, it's under 100 points all the way down to seventh. So, and then there's a big gap between 7th and 8th. But Bob Pasca leads Matt Hagen by 21. Robert Height by 40, and who's in 3rd. John Force in 4th at 52. Ron Capps in 5th. J.R. Todd 6th. Alexis DeJoria 7th. She's the one that's 99 out. Tim Wilkerson in 8th is 155 out. So there's the big gap there. Cruz Pedregon in 9th and Terry Haddock in your top 10 in the pro stock. Greg Anderson is now on top of that. He's got a 135-point lead over Stanfield. Erica Enders in third. She was up at the top for a while, but you can't count her out. She's got four championships, won two in a row twice, including 3 and 4 last year and the year before. Matt Hartford, fourth. Dallas Glenn, fifth. Mason McGahey, sixth. Derek Kramer, seventh. Kyle Koretsky, eighth. Troy Coughlin, Jr., ninth. I think he should be Jeg, but I think that's his real name. And Chris McGahey on the bubble. And 282 for Kenny Delco below the bubble. 305, that's one weekend. Actually, it could be two rounds of, one goes two rounds back past the other. That could change. And the motorcycles, the bikes. Matt Smith has a 170-point lead over Steve Johnson. Scotty Polachek, third. Ryan Oler, fourth. Karen Stouffer, fifth. She might be peaking at the right time there, girl. Angie Smith, sixth. Angel Sampei, seventh. Andrew Hines, eighth. Corey Reed, ninth. Joey Gladstone on the bubble And breathing down his neck in 11th is Eddie Krawick. There's a 3-point difference there, and it's not like Eddie Krawick to be below the top 10. It's the first time this year. It's the first time in years. So they all drive for Vance Hines, including Angel Sampe, who seems to be the leader in that round. And she is the winningest rider in the NHRA for women combined. So you talk about Erica, Brittany, Shirley Muldowney, Angie has them beat in wins. So title-wise, it was Shirley and Angie, and up until last year, Erica tied at 3 on the championships, but Erica decided to break the tie. So that takes care of NHRA, ARCA, race results. I thought I hit race results. There we go. The Shore Lunch 150 out at Iowa Speedway. Ty Gibbs takes the win. Daniel Dye second. Taylor Gray third. Corey Heim fourth. Nick Sanchez, fifth. Thad Moffitt sixth. Jesse Love seventh. Mason Diaz eighth. Raja Karuth ninth. And Brett Holmes rounds out your top 10. Drew Dollar, anybody else? Where's Stephanie Moyer? There's a young lady in the field. Wish they post a picture when you click on their link, but let's check the standings. Oops. Here we go. Ty Gibbs leads the points. By 4 over Corey Heim. Thad Moffitt is third. Nick Sanchez fourth. Drew Dollar fifth. Brad Smith sixth. Kyle Sieg seventh. Eighth, D.L. Wilson. Ninth, Tim Richmond and Jesse Love. Is 10th in points. So this one ain't over. And there is no playoff-type scenario in ARCA Menards series that I know of. So takes care of ARCA. Hey! Cats are starting to bother me, so don't worry about it, though. Anyway, we'll be back next week. Christopher Bell won the Xfinity race a couple of weeks ago. He locks in, and in the Cup race, Eric Amarola takes that one, and he locks in. So we have a past couple of events where Kurt Busch won and locked in, and Eric Amarola. So that shakes up the mix. Anyway, August 7th, which is not this weekend, the weekend after, NASCAR back on the road. All three major series, the trucks on Saturday at 12:30 on Fox Sports 1. And at 4 p.m., Xfinity Series takes the field on NBCSN. Of course, NBC owns Xfinity / Comcast, so you get the idea. And the Olympics will be over. And Sunday, August 8th, go bowling at the Glen, 3 p.m. Eastern on NBCSN. I'm your host, Vinny B. Hope you had an enjoyable week. The weather's nice and all that kind of stuff. So good day and good racing. Bye now.